is Bloomberg Surveillance.
Too many people out there think that Janet Yellen secretly knows exactly what she's going to do about interest rates, and she just isn't telling us.
I think there's just a broad appreciation across the central bank community that global growth momentum is slowing.
Everything I learned as a CFA has gone out the window here at the moment with this zero rate idea, but I don't want to get too worked up here.
Bloomberg Surveillance, your link to the world of economics, finance, and investment on Bloomberg Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Michael McKee and Tom Keene from New York on Monday, Bloomberg Surveillance. Mr. McKee, off. I've been so dismayed over my bracket. I'm drugged over my NCAA bracket. McKee decides, you said, I'm not coming in because your bracket was so bad. So Barry Ritholtz with me. Did you pick Villanova?
I did not.
I don't think anybody breathing except Chris Whalen. Villanova.
One of the guys in my office is a Syracuse alum, and I know I'm just not going to hear the end of this.
You will
week.
Not. Yeah, I mean, it's just been a disaster. Neil Schering's shaking his head, going, "These ugly Americans. It's just a disgrace." And Bloomberg Surveillance this morning brought to you by Cohn Resnick. As always, Cohn Resnick, accounting tax advisory. As economic policy changes, so do business decisions. Speak to the experts at Cohn Resnick. For the forward-thinking advice you need, find out more at CohnResnick.com, CohnResnick, CohnResnick.com. Lots to talk about. We switch right now to one of the tough calls. And I say this with respect for, both sides of the debate. Neil Schering is with Capital Economics, just a terrific United Kingdom powerhouse, working with Mark Williams on emerging markets. Just simply here, as the debate goes back and forth, U.S.-centric, developed world-centric, or is it time to pay a lot more attention to EM?
I think we have to pay more attention to EM. I would say that as the chief EM economist, of course. But bear in mind, this is now more than half the global economy. It's got to the stage now where we can't ignore what's happening.
Right.
It's not just China either. I mean, China's obviously the big one, but Brazil, Russia, India, that's about a quarter of the global economy.
Okay, that's great. Barry Ritholtz went into Grom this weekend over at the Time Warner Center. He got two four-scoop cones. It costs like $18, right? I mean, the way they're putting the cones out. And everything's from around the world. If you're going to the vanilla, if you go into the 28 flavors of Grom ice cream or gelato, whatever it is, which is the country that's best right now?
Well, this is part of the problem, that it's half the global economy and it's all slowing. It's all pretty weak at the moment. And obviously there's lots of concern about China, but Brazil is now in its deepest recession since they started collecting data at the turn of last century. So it's all pretty weak. My sense is, though, this year things will start to turn around, and I think that turnaround will be led by China.
Led by China.
So let's talk a little bit about China and the impact it's had. EM economies have a tendency to be very commodity rich. That's a big part of what they do. That clearly makes the strengthening dollar an issue. But if we look at China for the past decade, there was a giant boom that drove a lot of commodity prices higher. That in turn drove a lot of emerging market economies higher. And then China started throttling back 2 years ago. Their cement imports, their copper imports, all of their non-precious metal imports slowed, and coincidentally, the entire EM world stumbled. How important is China to the rest of the emerging market world?
It's absolutely critical. It's critical for two reasons. One is, as you say, commodity producers. So that matters for Latin America. That matters for Africa. But also, it matters for Asia too. So China's not just a commodity powerhouse driving commodity prices. It's a manufacturing powerhouse, and it's been pulling in manufacturers all through its supply chains in Southeast Asia and East Asia. So really, if we're going to start to assess what we think is going to happen in the emerging world, that's critical for the global economy. We need to start, and the story starts and ends in what happens in China.
So it's no longer a matter of China being further back from the train, from the locomotive. China pretty much is the locomotive.
It is the locomotive.
That's a big change, isn't it?
It is a huge change, and it's not going to. And that's something that's here to stay, I think, for the next few years at least.
I mean, I look at emerging markets and I get hydrocarbons, and maybe there's the interesting idea of Indonesia, which is sort of OPEC, non-OPEC, and every nation has its story. There's got to be what you in Capital Economics perceives is the next 4 year, 6 year, 8 year winner of capitalism and global enterprise and EM. Have you identified that culture and that society?
I think one of the issues is that, if you look back over the past decade, you had four of the biggest EMs, China, India, Brazil, Russia, all lifted through various reforms.
Does Neil know that those are called BRICS?
I don't. We don't use BRICS anymore.
Is this because you don't root for Manchester United?
That's become a dirty word, BRICS, hasn't it?
I don't know why.
It's not as dirty as Manchester United, but we won't get into that.
Okay, well, we'll get you going here. But where are the BRICS?
There's not much that really unites the BRICS apart from their size. They're huge, not just in terms of their GDP, but in terms of their population. Now, my sense is that what's going to happen over the next 10 years is the winners are going to be much smaller economies, certainly smaller by the standards of the BRICS. I would look at countries like Mexico, like Vietnam, like some of the smaller manufacturing-based economies. Now, they're not going to transform the global economy in the way that China and India and Brazil have, but they could bring certainly good returns for investors.
Let's talk a little bit about home country bias, which is the phenomena of people, regardless of where they live, Canada, U.S., England, France, it doesn't matter, to be wildly overexposed to their own country's stock market, mostly because they're familiar with the brands, the names, the CEOs, and underexposed to outside markets, whether they're developed or emerging. How does this play into what's the appropriate amount of emerging markets for an average person's portfolio?
Well, the first thing to say is that if you're based in the U.S. and you've had that home country bias for the past couple of years, then you've not done too badly. Certainly a lot better than if you'd piled into emerging markets.
But go back a few years before that, and it's cyclical. Some years you're underperforming if you're overly weighted to the U.S., and other years you're outperforming.
What tends to happen is when the U.S. market's done well, EMs have outperformed, and in periods where the global markets have had a weaker year, EMs have underperformed. Mm-hmm. Now, that's changed in the past couple of years, where irrespective of what's happened in global markets, EMs have just been clobbered across the board. And I think part of the reason is that playing EMs has become very difficult.
Is Janet Yellen central banker to your emerging markets?
I think the People's Bank of China is central bank to emerging markets at this stage.
Oh, really? That's fascinating.
Because what happens is if China stimulates its economy, and the Chinese economy picks up, that's going to stabilize global commodity prices, and that's critical for Latin America, for Russia, for parts of the Middle East. So really, at this stage, it's not about the Fed, I don't think. It's about the People's Bank in Beijing. The Fed matters for countries that have borrowed lots of dollars, like Turkey, for example, but, small beer in the big scheme of things.
I would think the strength of the U.S. dollar would be really critical to EM countries that are exporters of commodities.
It is, but bear in mind, a lot of the downside from a strong dollar is for countries that have borrowed in dollars, and they don't really exist to a large extent in emerging markets anymore. Most of the debt, and there is a debt problem, but it's mostly in local currency. I think, if you go to countries like Mexico, I've just come back from Mexico on holiday, really cheap. I'm surprised that people aren't going to Mexico on holiday because the peso has just collapsed. So you could eat out and it's a fraction of the cost of what it used to be.
Well, that speaks to global uncertainties of whether it's Brussels or Lahore. I mean, our international relations comes across us. I mean, one thing I would say to Americans is there's something about sitting in Dubai and realizing everybody goes to Lebanon for vacation. Most Americans would think that's just insane. But are we at a point where terrorism and global insecurities in a broad sense diminish economies?
I don't think we're at that stage yet across the board. I mean, clearly there are pockets of the world mm-hmm. where that matters, and it particularly matters for tourism. Obviously, most of the big issue for most of Latin America and the Caribbean at this stage is Zika and the effect that might be having. Not related to terrorism, of course, but that's the big issue. At this stage, there's not much evidence that it's weighing on the tourist industry.
Okay. Neil Shearing, thank you so much. Greatly appreciate it. With Capital Economics, just brilliant, with a nice update there on emerging markets. Remember, Barry, when it's easy, some sales guy stood up and said, you had to have 9 or 10% of your portfolio in emerging markets. And boy, has that changed with the
we say around the office, if something in your portfolio isn't in trouble, then you're not doing it right. The idea of having both developed and emerging markets and U.S. markets all in sync at the same time just doesn't happen. Something is always stinking the joint up, and that's the nature of diversification.
Do you sense, Barry, a distinction between large cap emerging market? Remember when the only stock you bought in Mexico was Telmex?
It's changed because so many of these companies have themselves, both outside of the United States, become global in nature. So there are a lot more, I don't want to say mega cap, but certainly mid to large cap companies that used to be below the
and
radar.
The panel that I did at Davos, that was the single message off the panel, was a U.S. mindset on one oligopoly within a country.
Doesn't work that way.
Flat out wrong.
Yeah, that's done.
That was the number one message.
It's diversification and globalization is now everywhere.
This is great. Neil Shearing, Capital Economics. Thank you. Barry Ritholtz will continue. Are you here like today or?
Whole week. You got me the whole week.
The whole week. Michael Barr, hold my hand, please. Okay, Barry Ritholtz, the entire week. And right now, he's stopped holding my hand with the news. Here's Michael Barr.
Tom, Barry, thank you very much. North Carolina's new law blocking Charlotte and other cities from passing anti-discrimination rules covering gay and transgender people is not going to happen without a fight. The American Civil Liberties Union and other groups have scheduled a news conference in Raleigh today to announce a federal court challenge. The Belgian health minister wished courage to all families today after announcing that four people injured in last week's Brussels attacks have now died. That brings the death toll to 35, including four Americans. Meanwhile, Brussels Airport is testing temporary infrastructure to see if it's in good enough shape to reopen. Global news, 24 hours a day, powered by our 2,400 journalists in more than 150 news bureaus from around the world. I'm Michael Barr. Barry, Tom?
Michael, thank you so much. The German two-year yield is a proxy for post-Draghi migrating lower, negative 0.483. That's something worth watching to see how that goes through the week. Don't forget Jobs Day on Friday. From New York, this is Bloomberg Surveillance.
The news update was brought to you by Flushing Bank. Open a complete business checking account with $15,000 or more. Get a free 16-gig Wi-Fi tablet. Visit flushingbank.com for details. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.